And joining us now from the Browns Radio Network, the fine analyst, former Browns offensive lineman Doug Deacon. Doug, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Vic.
Well, let's first talk about the news of the day, of the hour, of the week, of the however long it takes for the Browns to hire a new coach. But we know it was a crazy weekend with so many different angles on this story, Doug. And I don't know, the thing I came away from after all was said and done is that truly, you know, no one knows what's going on in those rooms except that where these negotiations take place, not just with the Browns but the other teams pursuing coaches, except the people in those rooms, because you get so many different versions of what the heck's happening.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you got to get a sense of what the people are all about and whether they're all in to do the job, and what their, you know, desires are in regards to responsibilities. And, you know, you want to make the right choice. And I think, you know, Jimmy Haslam has said, you know, it's not a matter if we get him today or tomorrow. It's a matter if we get the right one.
Yeah, and I think it makes great sense that they want to get this done as quickly as they can, but they're not going to rush it to get it wrong. And I think the other point with regard to, of course, a whole lot of discussion about Chip Kelly, is that you've got a guy who has had a great situation at Oregon and perhaps, you know, didn't feel, just given that if there were other NFL teams, and by all accounts there were besides the Browns, interested in him, that maybe his feelings were that he didn't want to be all in at this point in the NFL, and he wouldn't be the first college coach who kind of took that approach.
Yeah, and I think, you know, anytime you interview with different teams, not only the owners are picking the brains, I think the coaches that are interviewing are picking the brains, and, you know, everybody's trying to get a feel for one another, and, you know, you got to have a comfort level that would make you say, you know, this is the guy we want to, you know, lead us for the next 10 years. And obviously, you know, when they got done with the interview, and there wasn't a wholehearted commitment on his behalf as he wanted to go on to Philadelphia and do an interview with the Eagles. Mm-hmm. You know, it kind of told you that, you know, maybe we've got to go in a different direction.
Right. And that direction could ultimately prove to be every bit as, you know, as good or as exciting or as whatever you want to call it as what the Kelly direction might have been, because I know that got a lot of people fired up, especially after that bowl performance by his Ducks team and the offense and the quick pace and all that other stuff that people, I think, are taken by. But as I look at it, with five jobs still open now in the league, I think the Browns are still very much in the running for the best of the people out there. I don't sense that this situation should be viewed as them taking anything less. I mean, we'll see who the guy is ultimately, but just given the terrain of it right now, it's as wide open for the Browns as anyone else.
Well, yeah, and I think the other part of it is, you know, Chip Kelly has a different style of offense, and it's been very successful in the college ranks, but, you know, to run that offense, you need certain components and parts to make it work. And, you know, in as much as it, you know, it didn't materialize, I think on the other hand, when you look at the roster, you know, maybe in some ways it'll be a blessing, because a different coach might match up better with the personnel that's at hand right now.
Right. Doug Deacon joining us from the Browns Radio Network. Doug, here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. Doug, I want to talk about the Browns offensive line position review series that we have on this show, continuing on this show. And just starting with the fact, the obvious, that at right tackle, having Mitchell Schwartz step in and truly be a presence that I think this team did not have last year. It was a revolving door, and he didn't just occupy a spot there. He accounted himself, it seemed, very well throughout the whole season.
Yeah, for a rookie, he handled himself very well, and, you know, he got some growing pains in the exhibition season, and it was probably the best thing, because he got exposed to that wide nine, which is probably the toughest thing for an offensive tackle, is to block a defensive end out in space where he has three different ways he can go. But, you know, he took it and he put it in his memory bank, and, you know, each time he played a wide nine, he got better and better. And then, you know, when he got to the regular defenses and some of the other people, you know, he held his own. I mean, really, you know, an outstanding job for a rookie to play, you know, like every snap, and really not be noticed in regards to, he didn't have a lot of penalties, he didn't give up a lot of sacks, And, you know, he showed that he can play at this level and probably for a long period of time.
How concerned were you about how he would hold up when you first started studying him? You and I were standing on those practice fields during the offseason and through training camp. What was your level of confidence that he could, in fact, be what he became?
Well, when I pulled Joe Thomas aside one day and I said, Joe, what do you think of the rookie? And he says, he's got great technique. He's going to be okay. That kind of told me that, you know, when you have somebody that's done it for a period of time and understands the technique and the things that you have to go through to be successful at that position, those are usually your best barometers. And, you know, you watch them in practice, and sometimes in practice, you know, it's not the same as a game. But Joe, you know, I think, you know, gave me a better read than, you know, even just sitting there, you know, watching the one-on-ones and doing the inside drills and mm-hmm. things like that. That said, you know, okay, if Joe says he's okay, then he's okay with me.
Yeah, that is a tremendous endorsement from the six-time Pro Bowler, Joe Thomas at left tackle. Let's talk about the guards. And first, Jason Pinkston, up to the point that he suffered that blood clot that would end his season prematurely, and then Sean Laval. How we spent a lot of time last year talking about those two and their progress and their youth in 2011. What did you see from both of them up to the time that Jason had his season cut short and Sean Laval for the entire year?
Well, I think, you know, they obviously with the year's experience and a little bit more confidence, and confidence is a big part of it because, you know, your first year there, things are going pretty fast, and you're seeing things that you didn't see in the pro level, I mean the college level, and you're also going against different people, you know, week in, week out, and every guy is going to be different. And, you know, you've got to get a game plan. Okay, if a guy does this, this is how I'm going to play him. If a guy does this, this is how I'm going to play him. And you watch the tapes, but it's, you know, watching the tapes of games isn't like going out there and doing it at full speed. And, you know, because of the limited amount of practices that they have now, you know, you're going to get some growing pains. And I think, you know, the thing that was unfortunate was that, you know, Trent Richardson missed so much of training camp that they never really got a chance to get in sync totally, you know, with him. And then with that said, you know, Trent wasn't 100% himself. So I think, you know, the guards, you know, they were stout at the point of attack. And if anything, maybe you'd like to see, you know, a little bit more mobility out of them. But, you know, when it comes to, you know, the pocket and not getting pressure in the quarterback's face, they held up pretty good.
So the bottom line is I think that duo, and we'll see what Jason's recovery is like. You know, the signs certainly look good when you talk with him and get the progress, but we'll see what the offseason brings. And John Greco, for his part, I want to give him a lot of credit for stepping in there under tough circumstances and holding his own, right? I mean, he deserves some
well,
credit.
Yeah, and I mean, and there wasn't a fall-off, and that's what you're looking for. You know, if you if somebody goes down, you've got to have somebody step up and, you know, not only, you know, hold his own, but, you know, the working sync with, you know, Joe Thomas and with Alex Mack, and you know get a feel for the way they play, because you know sometimes you get guards that like to sit shorts, and sometimes you get guys that like to play a little softer, and there's a time period that it takes to adjust, because every, you know, guard is going to be, I think one year I had four different guards during the course of the season, and I don't think any of them played the same way, and you know, each time you adjust to it, and you know, I think, you know, in that regard, I think it's Joe Thomas and Alex Mack's, you know, ability to function at that level and adjust, you know, that makes it work. Because, you know, when you get somebody new in there, they're just trying to hold their own.
Right.
I think the other guys, you know, they've got to, you know, adjust a little bit and, you know, realize that this guy is going to be a little different.
So going forward, are we feeling pretty good about that position? And I know you can, you know, teams can do everything to upgrade themselves everywhere. But as things stand, the core, we know Joe Thomas, we know what Alex Mack is at center. Those two still are two of the very best at their positions. There's reason to feel good about this line going forward.
Yes, there is. I think, you know, if there's any concern, it would be, you know, maybe the depth at the backup tackle position. And, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, hopefully you don't find out, but it's always nice to know that, you know, if something would happen, that you have that swing tackle that could, you know, play on either side. And, you know, right now I'm not sure, you know, Neil Cousins played, you know, some tight end and short yardage situations, but didn't play a lot of pure tackle. So, I think that, you know, that's, you know, you mentioned Greco, so we know we've got three guards.
Right.
We've got Alex at center, and Greco can play center too. But I think that, you know, the missing thing would be, do we have the guy to play swing tackle if somebody goes down?
Right, and Ryan Miller got a little chance to play in that season finale. And I talked with him afterward. He said it was kind of overwhelming to see those Steeler pass rushers coming at him right away. But, you know, there's another guy who I think in the mix can be developed too.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's good that he did get some exposure, you know, in his rookie year at a game situation, though it was very little. You know, all of a sudden, you know, it opens your eyes to say, hey, you know, okay, I've been, you know, running scout team, I've been running second team, but that's in practice. And in practice, you know, there's a different tempo. And then when you play a team like the Steelers, you know, you're going against what the best run defense right. in the league, or second best, I think, going into the game. And you know, it's something that when you go to your off season, you say, you know, boy, you know, I've got to work on this because you know, this is a different type of football than college.
Doug, from a lineman's perspective, we always talk about what a coaching change would mean for a quarterback, depending on the system and how he would fit that. Even receivers, the style of you know, whether you have bigger guys or smaller guys, all of those things come into the discussion. Tight ends for the scheme or system of a particular coach. And if had Chip Kelly been here, we know it would have been a dramatic change from anything the Browns had done. And we don't, and you know, we could question how it would fit Brandon Weed and so on and so forth. But from the O-line perspective, how do linemen adapt and adjust to schemes? Because that seems to be the area that doesn't necessarily get – it's hard to dramatically shake that up in one fell swoop.
No, and I think, you know, had Chip Kelly come, he probably had different waist sizes on the pants of the offensive line because when you run that many plays, you better be in great shape. But, no, I think the basics of it is, you know, and I've always said is – you know, in the NFL, they don't cut you because you can't run block. They cut you because you can't pass block. And it's a mm-hmm. passing league. And you've got to find guys that, you know, can pass block at this level. And I think, you know, we look across the board, and they did a pretty good job in protecting the quarterback all year long. And, you know, with that said, you know, there's also the growing pains that you get with young guys. But, you know, when they're not noticeable, it gives you a lot of optimism for the next season.
Well, Doug, tremendous. We appreciate it, and I know we'll be catching up with you again soon, my friend.
Okay. Thanks, Vic.
Yep. He is Doug Deacon from the Browns Radio Network joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. We've got much more coming up on ESPN 850 WKNR.